From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Park City.
I feel like I haven't seen you in so long since we were on break last week.
You were reporting remotely from some mountain village.
Yeah, Montana. Always a great week. Okay, we have a great show today. First, we'll be speaking with dermatologist Dr. Jen Haley, who joins us every season as the season changes. Not every season, I guess summer and winter, to tell us how to help our skin get through this harsh and dry climate during the winter. As if living at 7,000 feet isn't enough challenge, it can do our skin a great disservice. She'll also talk about how our internal health determines our skin health.
And then longtime local physical therapist and yoga instructor Heather DeFord will join us to offer some self-care strategies for the holidays. Heather leads workshops and educational series centering around women's health. She focuses how to have a healthy relationship with your body and sexuality, whether men or women.
And finally, Jen O'Brien, the director of Bright Futures Program at Park City High School, will join along with second-year college student Lindsay Carretto, who went through the program as a high schooler and now continues during college. They highlight the successes and accomplishments of this program, which provides advocacy, support, and guidance for first-generation college students beginning at the high school grades and continuing throughout their whole college careers. Really a remarkable program. This is The Mountain Life. Stay with us.
Hey there, it's Noelle King from NPR's Morning Edition here. Join me every weekday morning right here on KPCW. I'll bring you the latest news from across the country and around the world, while the KPCW news team brings you the news and information you need from your neighborhood in Summit and Wasatch counties. It's a great way to start your day, and we hope you'll join us right here on KPCW.
This is The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
Well, we always realize when we have guests in for the winter, right, Pete, that they all seem to complain about cracking lips and, you know, dry skin, and they can't believe that we live in such a place. This harsh climate. You know, most of us live between 6,000 and 7,000 feet. I live almost at 9,000 feet. Where the sun is much stronger, and we have this low relative humidity, all making it very hard to keep skin healthy. Our next guest is Dr. Jen Haley. She's a part-time Park City resident and dermatologist who we welcome on each year before winter starts to talk about all things skin. She's also the host of the podcast Radiance Revealed. Jen Haley, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you. I love being here chatting with you. It's one of my favorite things to do, so thanks for having me on.
Well, we love it too. So let's just start with that. I mean, I talk about this each time, the altitude and the harmful UV rays, what it does to our skin at this altitude that it wouldn't do down, you know, even at 4,000 feet.
Right. I mean, I live in Arizona and people always think, oh, you live in the desert and it's so dry there. And I tell them Park City is much, much more dry than it is here for a number of reasons. You know, the elevation, well, let's take a step back. Both places are dry and the body's always going to try to get homeostasis with the outside environment. And the purpose of our skin is to help protect it from the outside world and work as a barrier. So we want to maintain that healthy barrier to continue to protect us from the outside world. And when it's dry on the outside, the moisture from the skin is going to want to wick away from the skin and reach homeostasis with the outside world. So we have to do a couple of things when it's dry that we wouldn't necessarily have to do when it's not so dry. And everyone may notice that it's more dry in the winter because as the heat gets turned on in the house, that reduces the humidity even further, making it more of an evident problem than we might feel in the summertime. So the other concern that we have at elevation is every 1,000 feet or so above sea level, we're getting 3% more UV rays. So rays as in radiation, ultraviolet radiation. So, you know, at 7,000 feet, that's 21% more radiation to the skin, which causes mutations, breaks down the skin barrier, and also contributes to some of the skin barrier degradation, which basically results in dryness and irritation and inflammation and sun damage.
Yes, yes. So it's probably not enough, although we should drink, you know, some say up to a gallon of water a day, but it's probably not enough to just drink water. I know that so much of our skin health relates also, they're finding more and more, to our gut health. So can you kind of go into that a little bit?
Sure. So our skin, we've mentioned this before, it has a lipid bilayer. So fats are very important and hydration is really important. So I like to drink enough water so the urine's clear, unless you just had a whole bunch of vitamins, then of course it's going to be a little discolored. But for the most part, drink enough water so your urine is clear. I don't give direct amounts because there's so many variables. You know, if you are sweating a lot, if you live at elevation, you know, there's just tons of different variables, your size, whatnot. So drink enough water so your urine is clear, because if you're not hydrated on the inside, your hyaluronic acid inside your body is not going to be plumped up enough. So it's going to look saggy and dehydrated. And then the other thing is you need to have enough healthy fats in the body. And that contributes to your brain health, as well as your skin health and your gut health, because we're finding that the gut health is related to both the brain and the skin. There's this thing called the microbiome, which is your gut, skin, and brain axis. And it's pretty fascinating because even our mood is related to our gut health. So 80 to 90% of our serotonin is produced in the gut. So if your gut is unhealthy, you're going to be a cranky person. If your gut is unhealthy, you're going to display inflammation and irritation to the skin as well. And we don't really have a lot of information on any particular probiotic that you can specifically take for each skin condition, but we have found links to a probiotic called Lactobacillus rhamnosus, R-H-A-M-N-O-S-U-S. The SP1 strain has shown beneficial effects for acne. But what we do see is that the more diversity in the gut and the healthier your gut microbiome, the healthier your mood, the healthier you're going to feel after you have a meal, you're not going to get bloated and, you know, gassy. And also the healthier your skin, which means less inflammation and irritation. And that's how I look at acne and rosacea most of the time. It's inflammation inside the body. And it's not just probiotics. It's also prebiotics and postbiotics we're talking about now.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think most of us who are here in Park City think of all of these outside factors as contributing to our skin health. We think of, and especially new people, you know, it is the dry air. They're coming from California or from wherever they've lived, and their lips are chapped for the first time and then cracking, and it's just a shock to the system. So you're discussing something we've talked about before, but for those who are new in our community, this idea of gut, you said multiple times, actually impacting our skin. Help me to understand that, because I'm not connecting those things. And how does my stomach, gurgle, gurgle, actually impact my skin?
Yes, I love that. I love that. I know we're really just learning a lot about this. I just want to take a step back as to why people who are new in the community have the hardest time. And it's because our body makes this natural moisturizing factor. That's actually what it's called. Thankfully, it's not some long Latin word like everything else. So it's called natural moisturizing factor. And it takes about 2 weeks for your body to produce this. So often one of the best moisturizers to improve the skin barrier is sunflower oil. It reduces inflammation and it also helps repair that skin barrier. And it just helps to produce ceramides as well, which are needed in the skin. But as far as the skin, brain, gut axis, our body, this sounds so overwhelmingly odd for us to believe, but a huge amount of our weight, I think somewhere around 70 to 80% of what our weight is, believe it or not, is microbes. Our DNA come from microbes more than they come from our parents. So these microbes, and I'm not just talking bacteria, there's things we're just discovering, fungal organisms, all sorts of other organisms are composed in our body, and it's all related. So if you look at the gut, basically the gut is in continuum with the skin from our mouth to our anus, and it just circles all around. So it's all related. And that's why the microbes in our gut, they produce all sorts of neurotransmitters and all sorts of, just different neuromodulators that basically control the systemic processes everywhere. And primarily what we're talking about here is inflammation, you know, because inflammation and cascade, like we see with the immune system, where if you're overreactive, you're going to have some sort of a consequence.
Well, this idea of inflammation is also relatively new to me, and I'm sure for many others, how inflammation can really be, you know, something we don't really, we may feel it, but we don't see it until there's these abnormalities in our skin. And I'm actually just seeing those. I have some nails that are changing, are pitted. And it, you know, someone has said that might be because of inflammation or some other immunity issues. So, you know, talk about this inflammation ideation.
Sure. You know, inflammation is such a broad topic. And in the dermatology world, we call it inflammaging because it does cause aging. So that constant state of stress, inflammation is basically just high levels of chaos and stress in the body. It doesn't allow things to function properly. So if you imagine an assembly line where everything is supposed to be going A to B to C to D, and you're throwing balls at the assembly line all day, that's what inflammation is doing to the body. It's causing deterioration and interruption of normal metabolic processes. And that's how I approach everything. Whether I'm doing telemedicine or just, you know, chit-chatting here, is you really want to take a look at, okay, what can I do? You know, we don't have to reach externally for all these things, but what can I do to kind of calm down my body, whether it's not drinking alcohol, getting more sleep, drinking more water, you know, maybe hydrating on the outside, eating the right foods as opposed to processed foods that can help support my body to basically do what it normally needs to do, because the body has all the answers. We don't really need to hack it so much. We need to just support it to do the right things that it needs to do.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're speaking with dermatologist Dr. Jen Haley. Jen, I'm wondering, there are oftentimes we hear of things that we can ingest and things that we can put on topically. And in my world, it would seem to me that things that we put into our system are likely much better than something that we're treating it with topically, unless, of course, it's like sunscreen. And I'm thinking of a couple of things. One of those is collagen, and I've been seeing this a lot around recently, like these collagen treatments, which to me says you're putting collagen on the outside, but I know that we take collagen pills, so it treats it internally. And the other thing is hyaluronic acid, which I think both, and you mentioned this before, you can do externally or internally. So let's start with collagen.
Sure. Yeah. Collagen topically is completely ineffective because it's such a large molecule. So it's not going to penetrate the skin. So I don't recommend people go out and buy collagen creams. Really, the only benefits you're going to get are from the moisturizer in the cream. I do believe in nourishing the skin topically. We kind of have to, especially in the dry, arid environment, because we have to help support the skin barrier. So we had talked a little bit about sunflower oil. You can do it on your lips. You can do it all over your skin. It's great for atopic dermatitis. Coconut oil is also really amazing. You want to look for cold pressed and organic when you're looking for your oils, but coconut oil is antimicrobial and it reduces staph infection. I just don't like it on the face because it can cause acne breakouts. Like, it's comedogenic. So it causes like blackheads and whiteheads basically. But on the face, you can use jojoba oil or sunflower oil fine. And for the body, coconut mixed with sunflower and jojoba oil to help increase the skin barrier. Now, hyaluronic acid topically, the large molecular weight will not be absorbed. So the skin can only absorb things that are less than 500 kilodalton. And unfortunately, I know, fun fact. So on most of the labels, they're not going to tell you how large the hyaluronic acid is. But you want to look for something that has small and large hyaluronic acid. So the large hyaluronic acid basically, hyaluronic acid is natural in our body. It draws in about 1,000 to 1,500 times its weight in water, which is beautiful. We want something to hold onto water in our skin because it's evaporating all day long in the dry environment. And the large molecular weight hyaluronic acid will give you an immediate result of looking smoother and plumper. But because it's just sitting on the skin, it's not going to really change the actual physiology of the skin. It's a very temporary effect, maybe for, you know, plumping up your lips that night or going out to an event and looking better. For the long term, a smaller molecule is going to help hydrate the skin and pull in water. But you need to put a moisturizer or an oil over the hyaluronic acid in order for it to sit there. Otherwise, it's not going to hold on for it too long. It's just going to evaporate. So that's topical.
Wow. Okay. So are we learning new things about collagen taking it internally then?
Yes. Yes, it is. It's exciting. So I think it came on my radar maybe 5 to 10 years ago. I don't know. Time goes pretty quickly. So 5 to 10 years ago, it came on the radar for me in the field. And, you know, scientists and doctors tend to be very dogmatic and not open to these things. I'm a little bit different, but everyone's like, no, it doesn't work. Well, there have been some scientific literature. There have been some studies now showing that collagen can improve the hydration of the skin, right? Which is important because that's going to make your face look plumper and your wrinkles look smoother. And it's also going to, you know, reduce the problems that we have with a dry environment. So what kind of collagen now is the question. So I've in the past, I've seen the studies with bovine collagen having the best results. And just like anything you put in your body, if the cows are not eating healthy food, then the collagen they produce is not going to be healthy either. So you want to source it from grass-fed, 100% grass-fed cows. And then the other thing is now there's these amazing multi-sources of collagen. And I actually have someone on my podcast discussing this next week from a company called CB Supplements. I don't have any conflict of interest with them. I'm just very intrigued by their products because they have multiple sources of collagen. And why are we even talking about collagen? You know, why do we need it at a certain age? It's because it's the most abundant protein in the body. About 35% of the body is made of collagen, and it's in our blood vessels, it's in our skin, obviously, it's in our bones, it's in our organs, in our joints. And even though there's 28 different types, there's only three main types that we really, that are composed 90% of it. And what happens between the ages of 25 and 35 is that the production of collagen slows down in the body, which is why supplementation can be beneficial to kind of help support that as we age. And there are foods with collagen, which I always prefer foods over supplements, yet we don't eat these foods too much. Bone broth, organ meats, ligaments, tendons, meat on the bone kind of thing, and eggshell membrane. So that's kind of what we're looking at here.
Well, it's so great that you actually listed, that was my next question, you know, rather than a supplement, what natural foods? And so, you know, the encouragement is to take those chicken carcasses and make a bone broth out of them.
Yeah, definitely.
So great idea. And so hopefully you have some recipes that we can use some livers and some intestines or to make some wonderful, rich collagen food.
No, I rather supplement. I mean, the thing is I have a histamine intolerance. So bone broth doesn't work well if you're prone to hives, basically. But I get asked a lot, like, you know, why fruits and vegetables? So, you know, things like red pepper or vegetables and fruits high in vitamin C are really essential in supporting your own collagen production. Just taking collagen and having a bad diet isn't going to help. You want to support it by taking high quantities of vitamin C naturally in your diet, because there's polyphenols and other things in real foods that we're not going to just get from a supplement. And then people ask how much, and typically I recommend 7 to 10 grams per 50 pounds of body weight.
Mm. Well, you really are truly a scientist, and I loved even your reference of the kilodalton. I had to Google that while we were talking, and just you are an expert, and we really, really appreciate your expertise on skin and dermatology.
Thanks, Pete. Thanks. Yeah, I get a lot. You know, the thing about the skin is We can't absorb everything through skin, but we certainly can absorb some things, which is why you have to be careful with the toxins in the environment. So, you know, we try to utilize that science to benefit us and not to hurt us. So once you know the information, you can do with it as you will, right?
Mm.
Excellent. Well, I was going to say that Dr. Haley uses so many new words that I, you know, normally if I hear a new word during an interview, I can Google it right then.
Right.
But there are so many that I have to re-listen to the interview afterwards. Yeah. They're all good. But, you know, okay, a lot of them are very dermatology related that I may not ever be able to use at a cocktail party.
Happy to translate anything. I'm so sorry. I don't want to speak over anyone. You know, I'm trying to make it simpler, but it's complicated stuff, you know, but practical application, I think, is hopefully presentable.
Yes. Right. And that's why we love having you on the show. Dr. Jen Haley, dermatologist, thanks so much.
Bye. Thank you.
And stay with us. We will be back to talk with an equally interesting woman in our community, Heather DeFord, when we return. It's The Mountain Life on KPCW. Stay with us.
Do you have an old car, RV, or boat taking up space in your yard? Donate it to KPCW. You'll receive a tax credit, and we receive a donation. We'll take care of everything. Just call 435-649-9004. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Pete Stoughton. We were just speaking with Dr. Jen Haley. She's a dermatologist who joins us regularly. Our next guest, Heather DeFord, is a physical therapist and a yoga instructor, but her passion lies in educating on women's health. She holds workshops for both young women who are beginning to experience their bodies change and growing, all the way up to postmenopausal women who encounter very different experiences and issues. She joins us today to give us some thoughts on dealing with, well, stress in our lives as women and how to best care for ourselves. Heather DeFord, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with this. Your passion projects, you say, are educating women on their bodies. And I know you have a particular interest in young women. And why is that?
Well, I've been a pelvic floor physical therapist for 17 years, and I've heard many, many women's stories. And there's a general theme that they are getting this information for the first time, whether they are 17 or 70. They are kind of a little bit shocked that they haven't already learned about their body in this way. So I believe that educating our young ladies is one of the best practices that we can do as a healthcare community to support women's health.
Yes. So what you say is so true. There are so many things, and I thought I was extremely aware, and I, you know, as a young person and a 20-something-year-old, when I was first experiencing, well, lots of new things with my body. And then, you know, fast forward a handful of decades, and I am amazed at the things that I didn't know and I'm just learning now about sexuality, about my body. And I can imagine, you know, and these are things that I talked quite often about, you know, with my friends, but maybe we just never went really deeply. Do you find conversations now changing, or, you know, what do you think about this idea of, you know, not knowing our bodies?
You know, there's a strong learning curve, and I think that the pelvic floor and our reproductive health is somewhat of a taboo subject because it has to do with pee, poo, and sex, and those aren't necessarily glamorous topics, and they make people cringe, and they're not that comfortable, and I have to remind myself, because I am so immersed in these conversations that I'm super comfortable talking about all of the above, and so bringing this information down to a comfort level and providing a safe place for women, older, younger, to talk about it has been one of the biggest gifts, because when you can gather a group of women and get together and start talking about it, it's not just my information, but it's all of their anecdotal stories, which I find very helpful to every woman's individual growth. You know, and in the United States, we simply don't do enough education. And other countries are in a much better situation. They've embraced this information a lot sooner than we have.
I think for me, what was the most powerful learning opportunity was actually with you on a river. Mm-hmm. And we started this conversation, and I didn't ask it this bluntly, but I was like, why should dads care? You know, or what, you know, why do we need to know? Mm-hmm. And it was 2 hours of floating down a river and having my life changed. So this idea of actually bringing fathers and, you know, brothers and everybody along in this journey and understanding, why is that so important? Bring everyone else down the river with us.
Right? That would be an amazing experiment. Floating down a river with a pelvic floor PT. I'm all about trying to demystify the body. And for, you know, men's anatomy and their physiology around sexual health started to become tested and experimented, and there was dissection. And then 20 years later, they started doing that for women's bodies. So, when I was in high school, boys, you know, doing self-pleasure and touching themselves was like widely accepted, but it was never, young women were never really given that permission, and it was sort of taboo, and there's certain things that girls aren't supposed to talk about. So I think that as a father and as a husband and as a brother, one of the things that would be the most helpful is to normalizing it. And, you know, women menstruate every month, you know, on average, and they start at 11, 12, and they do it all their life, but it's not something that is readily comfortable to talk about. And I'd like to change that, because, you know, in some countries, you know, we have some countries that are very progressive, like Britain and Australia. But in other countries, you know, young girls, they're trying to hide their evidence of menstruation. And so, you know, you have two ends of the spectrum on it. But, you know, Britain just came out recently, and their National Institute on Health just said that it's important for women at the age of young girls at 12 to start learning about their pelvic floor.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. And what is currently your recommendation, like where should we start here in the U.S. and, mm-hmm. you know, should that be in the public education system, private practice? What's your first kind of steps?
I think that, you know, ideally it would be coming from parents. But I do know, so I've done these yoga workshop series, and I did it for fifth graders and sixth graders, and sixth grade was too late. They were way too self-conscious. And so I think, you know, if you don't have a community that supports that has a class, then there's some great books out there that you can start with. And I was just trying to look one up, but maybe we could just have those available on the website where to start. In the schools, they talk about the nuts and bolts about reproductive health. They don't talk about strategies to decrease PMS. They don't talk about what's the difference between a Diva cup and a tampon. They go very high level, and you know, the information that I offer has nothing to do with should you have sex or should you not. It's more about learning your body. And I think learning about your body and going over the anatomy is one of the first places to start. Once you get comfortable with the anatomy, then all the functions can start making sense. And it's a wondrous, amazing place to start.
It's so interesting to hear you talk, Heather. And I don't have girls, I have boys, but I'm thinking back, you know, so many decades ago when I went through this. I mean, most of my friends and I, you know, we didn't talk to even our mothers about our, you know, first menstruation. We just hit it and we figured out, you know, on our own sort of how to use tampons or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Now I see that it is, you know, they talk about it in words like, you know, that young women have a right, or women throughout their entire menstruation have a right to have, you know, free access to tampons wherever they are. I remember days of you were so embarrassed to ask even other girls, do you have a quarter so I can put it in this machine here in the bathroom? Mm-hmm. And it's really sad now when I look back on it. So this is, what you're trying to combat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if there was more comfort around this cycle of life that brings us, that brings us creation, I think it would be healthy on so many different levels. Let's not be naive. I mean, it's inconvenient, it's messy, it's not fun, and there's some, side effects to it. So when I first started doing this, I was like, wouldn't it be great if it was like, oh, I can't wait to get my period, and I can't wait to menstruate, and it's just so awesome. And I realized that that's a big ask. I realize that it's not like everyone's going to be ritualizing this in a really holistic, lovely way. But if there can just be more normalization and comfort around it, I think that would be a great place to start.
Do you have some of those book titles off the top of your head? Or even one, because I'm picturing lots of moms out there right now listening.
And dads.
Yeah, and dads. Sorry.
And cousins and brothers, and brother. Hopefully.
I know. I kind of wish that I had a son, because I think that would be so interesting to raise a young man to be sensitive and understanding. And so now I'm just left with, I'm going to have to teach my girls to advocate for themselves.
Yes.
Right. To for our male listeners, to be empathetic and to assist, and to be part of that process as husbands and brothers and friends. Mm-hmm. That is something that I think you speak powerfully of, that journey for everyone. But the reality is it is everybody's journey. It's not, one person's. We're all in this together in the sense that we're having that common experience, and we're friends, and we're lovers and brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think that there's just in our society, there's kind of the messaging of like, put a tampon in, spray some perfume and forget that you're even, this is happening. And I think giving, when you're feeling tired and you're run down, that's listening to your intuition, giving permission to not just ignore these symptoms or these feelings that you're having and honoring that and going with the calm and the resting when your body needs it. So the names of the books, this is for 3 to 7 years old, Riding the Potty Train, which is discussing bathroom hygiene and bladder habits and bowel habits. And then Below Your Belt, How to Be Queen of Your Pelvic Region. It's for a little older population for ages 9 and up. The AlmightyGirl.com is a good place to look, AlmightyGirl.com. I feel like if the sooner that women can be comfortable with their bodies, the more respect they will have. And I've given some talks in the health classes in high school, and that's been co-ed. And that's been a very powerful experience, because it's being able to talk about some of these things. And I had a patient the next day who said, my son was in your lecture yesterday. And I was kind of nervous, because when you're teaching or talking to high school students, there's a lot of blank stares out there. And I can't tell if they're just too cool to look interested or they're sleeping with eyes open. And I said, oh my goodness gracious, what did he say? He said, he came home and said, Mom, I'm really sorry. I had no idea what was involved with your monthly cycle.
Oh my goodness.
I know, pretty cool.
That is.
And then also just, to be able to say to a co-ed group of young adults is, this whole intercourse and sex thing, there's so much energy and charge around it. And I just like to basically say it should be pleasurable all the time, every time. And just planting those seeds, because I think in our industry, the images out there, the languaging is, I think for decades, there's been a lot of emphasis on on the male's experience, but there hasn't been as much for females. And I think it all basically just starts with having a positive relationship with your body and getting to know it.
Absolutely. Your website is holisticwomb.com. Mm-hmm. And you, I think you said to me that your next workshop is not till the spring, and we only have about a minute left, but there's a big reason behind this. And that is because you are taking a leave of absence and taking your two wonderful girls to out of the country. Tell us just quickly about it and why you're doing it, because I think it all comes back to what you're talking about.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I've been a working mom, and it's been sustainable and great for many years, but I need to spend more time with the family. I need to focus on my own health as I age. You know, I need the collagen as well, and I need to focus on the right supplements and the right food, and it's time for my own self-care. And so I can't work and be the mom that I want to be. And my girls are in dual immersion programs, and we just figured Spanish-speaking country was the place to go.
So Ecuador it is.
Ecuador it is, and we're going to the Valley of Longevity.
That's perfect.
I love it. Uh-huh. Well, Heather DeFord, it's always such a pleasure to talk to you. Holisticwomb.com, you will have, no doubt, your next workshops posted there. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, I hope that this interview gets passed around among moms and dads.
Brothers and sisters.
Yep. Because it really, really is so important. And we didn't even really get to talk about the pelvic floor, which we'll have to have you back to talk more about. Again, early education.
Yes. On that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Heather, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And stay with us. This is The Mountain Life on KPCW Park City. We'll be speaking with Bright Futures, a very amazing program at Park City High School, supporting first-generation college students starting in high school and all through their college years. When we return, stay with us.
And welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Jen O'Brien, Director of Bright Futures, along with Lindsay Carretto, a second-year student at Utah State University majoring in psychology, who went through the Bright Futures program, join us today. The program takes first-generation students, or kids, meaning those who will be the first in their family to go to college, in their sophomore year of high school, and supports them all the way through college. First-generation kids tend to lack the support and know-how to figure out how to navigate through applications, and then once they get into school, to stay in. They will share with us some of the challenges that face these students and how Bright Futures successfully overcomes them. Jen O'Brien joins us in the studio, and Lindsay joins us via phone from Utah State University. Welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much, Pete and Lynn. Good to be here.
It's great to have you on air. And Lindsay, I'm going to actually go to you first, as you're at school at Utah State. How are you doing, and how is college?
Yes, hi. I am doing good. I actually love being at Utah State. I think it was the great place, a great campus for me, and I'm getting ready for finals. I'm excited to have break soon, but it's a little stressful right now, but we're getting through it.
Yeah, it for everybody, it's stressful for finals, and yet you don't have the same, family, hey, I can call mom or dad and talk about, what was the finals experience like? Obviously your parents are supportive, but how is this Bright Futures program helping you navigate through some of these first experiences for you as anyone, but also first in your family?
Yeah, they have really helped in just providing that support and being there. Like you mentioned, my parents can't help me. I can't call them and ask them how to study, how to manage my time better. And just knowing that I have Nikki, Jen, other students as well on campus has been really helpful for me, because I can count on the older students above me who have a year under their belt already, and they can I can ask them for advice. How can I study better? How can I make a schedule that will work for me? And just knowing that they are there for that. They have supported me in that way. And they also provide us with study skills. They send emails and they also give us like Zoom meetings where they talk about what ways we can prepare better, how we can learn how to read our books, how to get a calendar and write down what we need to do, and just a lot of effective study skills that they give us that my parents couldn't really help me with.
Jen O'Brien, this program has really taken off in this community. It's grown pretty exponentially. And if you look back, I was watching Bright Futures during Live PC, Give PC Day. The amount of support in this community was phenomenal. I think you met your goal, you know, even before the day started, and then you went on to almost double your goal. And so talk a little bit about the structure of the program and then why you think it is, you know, in this community so heralded as just an amazing program.
Yeah, thanks, Lynn. And thanks, Lindsay, for being here, taking time out of your college schedule. Yeah, I think there's so much support for this program, and really because of these kids. You know, we now have more than 100 kids with so much academic confidence and ability, and now so much, you know, potential to actually make it through to college graduation and come back to the community and support their families and really change the game for the, you know, for that family for a generation. And it's amazing because I think a lot of people don't even know really the structure of how it works. Yeah. But, you know, it is, this is a program of the Park City Ed Foundation. If anyone has ever met Abby McNulty, they'll know that, you know, 96% of our tax dollars go out of state for education. And so they really are filling those gaps and creating programs that support the students here in Park City. And this is one of those. So it is a PCEF program. We start working with the kids in the summer before 10th grade. So that is, it's so impactful to get to know the kids and their families and to have a 7-year journey together where we're saying, you know, we've got your back. We're here for you every step of the way. And that support takes many different forms. Sometimes, you know, in the high school programming, we're starting at a young age to say, what will make you a strong candidate for college? What are the things you need, the skills you need, the extracurriculars, the clubs, the internships? Because when you figure that out in 12th grade, it's too late.
Yeah.
That's also like helping build their confidence. And another big focus in those early years is relationships. Relationships, creating that peer, positive peer support group with other kids who have the same goals. That's a game changer. Also, having the confidence to go out of your comfort zone and making relationships with, whether it's our advisory board members or internship supervisors. Just there's a lot of skill building in those early ages that sets them up for that long-term success.
So you have this summer program. I'm blanking on what it's called right now.
Summer Academy.
Summer Academy. Yeah. And I attended one of the meetings, and you had someone who is a professional in the community and very accomplished and very charismatic. And he was talking to the kids about the things that we all try to remember to teach our kids. But they were these little details that, you know, that many of us don't remember when it's time, you know, but it's, you know, right down to looks an adult in the eye and shake their hand and say, nice to meet you. Like, these are basics, but it's things that, you know, we all may slip up on, and especially young people, right? And so it goes from that sort of support into other types of support, like this professional development and getting the kids in internships. Their resumes, when they get to college, are phenomenal, you know, like probably better than my resume looks at this point in my life. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's something we stress early on, and they really hear and listen to. I always wish my own boys could go through this program, because it's, you know, it's the things that we should be teaching as a family. And we do try and mix. We try and get, community mentors, but also their older first-gen mentors. We have now so many older students and people who have been first-gen success stories that are coming back in and being role models for these kids. So yeah, they're getting a lot of support. They're often pushed out of their comfort zone, you know, for sure. They're going on gallery strolls on Main Street with community members and really just practicing those social skills that will become important in the workplace later on.
All right, Lindsay, here's the question for you then. What was the most uncomfortable but rewarding challenge that Bright Futures has given you as an opportunity?
There was this one time where we went and they taught us how to eat properly.
We all need that lesson.
Yeah. There was so many utensils on the table, and the fact that there was like a way that a certain order that you have to eat in, that it was an experience. It was fun, but I was a little confused at first. But now I know how to properly eat.
And something you would never have thought through. But it does, you know, I don't know as much now, but it does in certain circumstances pay dividends where you might be at a formal dinner or you might be at a fundraiser or you might be meeting with somebody for lunch or dinner, and you can bring some of these into reality. And so I'm sure as a second year, you might not be having some of those experiences, Lindsay, where you're like, aha, that how to use the utensils really paid off. But are you having some of those moments where some of those situations that were uncomfortable are paying dividends for you?
Yes, I am. Networking. I have been able to, they taught us how to, you know, properly introduce yourself and speak to adults and talk about the things that you've done and the things that you want to do. I just applied for a job, and just knowing that I have experience working with a special ed because of an internship that I got through Bright Futures, just knowing that I have that experience has set me up to be a better candidate for the job, and just being able to talk to potential managers about who I am and what I do and my passions, that has been really rewarding.
That's wonderful. I also wanted to bring up the fact that there's this kind of staggering statistic about first-generation kids, once they get into college, the rate at which they either drop out. And what is that statistic, Jen? You told me yesterday and I forgot.
Yeah, these are numbers that are pretty impactful. This is even before COVID. The statistic was 11% of first-gen students who get to college will graduate with a degree.
Right, which is pretty low. And that's why Bright Futures also supports the kids all the way through college. And one of the things I know you're doing, Lindsay, as a second year, you've got it wired, right? You know a thing or two. And tell us what you did for the group from Bright Futures in Park City who came to Utah State this fall as freshmen. How did you help them along? Because this is important.
Yeah, one of the things that's one of the great things about the program is that we have crews even in college. So it's just a group of us who are at the same campus. And I was actually able to help the incoming freshmen during the summer register for their classes. I remember my freshman year, I kind of struggled a little bit of how to navigate the system and how to actually register for your classes. And so I was able to put together a few slides and show them step by step. This is where you go to register for your classes. This is how you drop one if you need to. I also helped a student. They were struggling with finding a parking pass. And so I helped direct them to the right resources. I've helped a student find tutors on campus because they were struggling with the class. So it's kind of a little bit of everything. Whatever I can help with, I can look at the resources on campus because we have a lot of resources that students don't know about. And yeah, we kind of work through it together.
Great. What do you want to say about that, Jen? This is obviously something that you're also preparing the kids to do. Once you go off to college, you're going to be a peer mentor. part of the program.
It's interesting because, you know, a lot of people will focus on the financial support that we're providing these kids, and that is a significant factor, you know, scholarships, but also need-based aid and emergency funding. But the real secret here is that it's the one-on-one coaching from a Bright Futures College coach that makes such a key difference. And now that we have these older kids like Lindsay on campus, it's like an extension of that. The kids are, they just feel supported, whether it's from, you know, Nikki, their college coach, or from the other kids on campus. So, and we're finding, interestingly enough, like, you know, when we have kids now going out of Utah, that's going to be a big change for us, and we're going to be using kind of our Park City network to find other Park City kids or other, you know, other mentors on campus. But right now, the way it's set up, it's really a powerful support system for the kids.
And are there similar programs across the country that you guys are modeling this after, or is this kind of like a homegrown Park City initiative?
No, absolutely. This was modeled after a program in the Los Angeles area called Bright Prospect. And one of our board members, I mean, they have an incredible success rate with thousands of kids in the program. They have about an 86-88% college graduation rate. And if you compare that to the 11% we were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. it's pretty impactful. So we did, we really duplicated their programming in and then adapted it. There's a lot of differences between our communities. These kids are getting a lot of support in that high school. They are very academically prepared for college, especially we push them to participate in the Dream Big program. And a lot of the kids are in the Latinos in Action class. They're getting a lot of skills and support there. So what we support them and how we support them is slightly different, but we did have a phenomenal curriculum to base our program off of.
Yeah, I was certainly curious to see, you know, what does this look like in Park City? So what's the unique couple differences here?
I would say that what we've adapted is there's not as much need for the academic support, or because that is so strong. They have committed to first-gen students and have a lot of programming in the high school. The counselors are fantastic. So that whole part of it we've stepped away from. We are still, though, taking the kids on campus visits a lot, taking their families on campus visits, and then really incorporating the parents and making sure that they're on board and supporting in the way they need to support and prepared for that whole financial aid process. So we've been able to kind of dig in deeper into some other areas because the kids are so well cared for at the high school.
It's such an amazing program, and unfortunately we're out of time. We could talk to you for quite a bit longer and hear all about the ins and outs, but Bright Futures, we're speaking with Jen O'Brien and Lindsay Carreto, who is a second-year student at Utah State University, joining us via Zoom. So thank you both for joining us, and keep up the great work. It's really a wonderful program.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Certainly. And thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life here on KPCW Park City. Thanks also to all of our guests today. We've had some incredible guests. Dermatologist Dr. Jen Haley, also Heather DeFord, yoga instructor and physical therapist, and Jen O'Brien, the director of Bright Futures, along with Lindsay Carreto, who went through the program as a high schooler. You've been listening to The Mountain Life here on KPCW Park City. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
Have a great day.